Chapter 15. Should be married soon, not to a poor man, but one who can give her a fitting position. Presently Rex, with his arm in a sling, was on his 2 miles walk to Offenden. He was rather puzzled by the unconditional permission to see Gwendolyn, but his father's real ground of action could not enter into his conjectures. If it had, he would first have thought it horribly cold-blooded, and then have disbelieved in his father's conclusions. When he got to the house, everybody was there but Gwendolyn. The four girls, hearing him speak in the hall, rushed out of the library, which was their schoolroom, and hung round him with compassionate inquiries about his arm. Mrs. Davilow wanted to know exactly what had happened, and where the blacksmith lived, that she might make him a present, while Miss Mary, who took a subdued and melancholy part in all family affairs, doubted whether it would not be giving too much encouragement to that kind of character. Rex had never found the family troublesome before, but just now he wished them all away and Gwendolyn there, and he was too uneasy for good-natured feigning. When at last he had said, "Where is Gwendolyn?" and Mrs. Davilow had told Alice to go and see if her sister were come down, adding, "I sent up her breakfast this morning. She needed a long rest." Rex took the shortest way out of his endurance by saying, almost impatiently, "Aunt, I want to speak to Gwendolyn. I want to see her alone." "Very well, dear. Go into the drawing room." "I will send her there," said Mrs. Davilow, who had observed that he was fond of being with Gwendolyn, as was natural, but had not thought of this as having any bearing on the realities of life. It seemed merely part of the Christmas holidays which were spinning themselves out. Rex, for his part, thought that the realities of life were all hanging on this interview. He had to walk up and down the drawing room in expectation for nearly 10 minutes, ample space for all imaginative fluctuations. Yet, strange to say, he was unvaryingly occupied in thinking what and how much he could do when Gwendolyn had accepted him, to satisfy his father that the engagement was the most prudent thing in the world, since it inspired him with double energy for work. He was to be a lawyer, and what reason was there why he should not rise as high as Eldon did? He was forced to look at life in the light of his father's mind. But when the door opened, and she whose presence he was longing for entered, there came over him suddenly and mysteriously a state of tremor and distrust which he had never felt before. Miss Gwendolyn, simple as she stood there, in her black silk, cut square about the round white pillar of her throat, a black band fastening her hair which streamed backward in smooth silky abundance, seemed more queenly than usual. Perhaps it was that there was none of the latent fun and tricksiness which had always pierced in her greeting of Rex. How much of this was due to her presentiment from what he had said yesterday, that he was going to talk of love? How much from her desire to show regret about his accident? Something of both. But the wisdom of ages has hinted that there is a side of the bed which has a malign influence, if you happen to get out on it, and this accident befalls some charming persons rather frequently. Perhaps it had befallen Gwendolyn this morning. The hastening of her toilet, the way in which Bugle used the brush, the quality of the shilling cereal mistakenly written for her amusement, the probabilities of the coming day, and, in short, social institutions generally, were all objectionable to her. It was not that she was out of temper, but that the world was not equal to the demands of her fine organism. However it might be, Rex saw an awful majesty about her as she entered, and put out her hand to him, without the least approach to a smile in eyes or mouth. The fun which had moved her in the evening had quite evaporated from the image of his accident, and the whole affair seemed stupid to her. But she said with perfect propriety, "I hope you are not much hurt, Rex. I deserve that you should reproach me for your accident." "Not at all," said Rex, feeling the soul within him spreading itself like an attack of illness. "There is hardly anything the matter with me. I am so glad you had the pleasure. I would willingly pay for it by a tumble, only I was sorry to break the horse's knees." Gwendolyn walked to the hearth and stood looking at the fire in the most inconvenient way for conversation, so that he could only get a side view of her face. My father wants me to go to Southampton for the rest of the vacation, said Rex, his baritone trembling a little. Southampton. That's a stupid place to go to, isn't it? Said Gwendolyn, chilly. It would be to me, because you would not be there. Silence. Should you mind about me going away, Gwendolyn? Of course. Everyone is of consequence in this dreary country, said Gwendolyn, curtly. The perception that poor Rex wanted to be tender made her curl up, and harden like a sea anemone at the touch of a finger. Are you angry with me, Gwendolyn? Why do you treat me in this way all at once? Said Rex, flushing, and with more spirit in his voice, as if he too were capable of being angry. Gwendolyn looked round at him and smiled. He treat you? Nonsense. I am only rather cross. Why did you come so very early? You must expect to find tempers in dishabille. Be as cross with me as you like, only don't treat me with indifference, said Rex, imploringly. All the happiness of my life depends on your loving me, if only a little better than anyone else. He tried to take her hand, but as he hastily eluded his grasp and moved to the other end of the hearth, facing him. Pray don't make love to me. I hate it. She looked at him fiercely. Rex turned pale and was silent, but could not take his eyes off her, and the impetus was not yet exhausted, that made her start death at him. Gwendolyn herself could not have foreseen that she should feel in this way. It was all a sudden, new experience to her. The day before, as he had been quite aware that her cousin was in love with her, she did not mind how much, so that he said nothing about it. And if anyone had asked her why she objected to love-making speeches, she would have said, laughingly, "Oh, I am tired of them all in the books." But now the life of passion had begun negatively in her. She felt passionately averse to this volunteered love. To Rex at 20, the joy of life seemed at an end more absolutely than it can do to a man at 40. But before they had ceased to look at each other, he did speak again. Is that last word you have to say to me, Gwendolyn? Will it always be so? She could not help seeing his wretchedness, and feeling a little regret for the old Rex who had not offended her. Decisively, but yet with some return of kindness, she said, about making love? Yes. But I don't dislike you for anything else. There was just a perceptible pause, before he said a low goodbye, and passed out of the room. Almost immediately after, she heard the heavy hall door bang behind him. Mrs. Davilow, too, had heard Rex's hasty departure, and presently came into the drawing room, where she found Gwendolyn seated on the low couch, her face buried, and her hair falling over her figure like a garment. She was sobbing bitterly. My child, what is it? Cried the mother, who had never before seen her darling struck down in this way, and felt something of the alarmed anguish that women feel at the sight of overpowering sorrow in a strong man, for this child had been her ruler. Sitting down by her with circling arms, she pressed her cheek against Gwendolyn's head, and then tried to draw it upward. Gwendolyn gave way, and letting her head rest against her mother, cried out sobbingly, "Oh, Mama, what can become of my life? There is nothing worth living for." "Why, dear?" said Mrs. Davilow. Usually she herself had been rebuked by her daughter for involuntary signs of despair. "I shall never love anybody. I can't love people. I hate them. The time will come, dear, the time will come." Gwendolyn was more and more convulsed with sobbing, but putting her arms round her mother's neck with an almost painful clinging, she said brokenly, "I can't bear anyone to be very near me but you." Then the mother began to sob, for this spoiled child had never shown such dependence on her before, and so they clung to each other. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.